I think they have. I found out from the coaches that a bunch of them last night were in the players' lounge at the hotel watching games. So that's a good sign that guys were, you know, already focused on, you know, what we have to do. It doesn't take away from enjoying the win in a moment.
Bonnie Williams today in meeting with reporters. Yes, I think my players have moved on from the L.A. Clippers win, and I guess that's the one benefit to the bubble. You don't really have much of a choice but to move on from the Clippers win because you just got one more tomorrow if you're the Phoenix Suns.
I'm sure Devin Booker was scouring social media, you know, for about 3 or 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know what, I'm not going to play Fortnite tonight. I want to see what everybody's saying about my shot.
Yeah.
Enjoy that, but when you wake up, you realize that there are games today that have a meaning, that have meanings in the standings, and you realize that you have a game against an Indiana Pacers team that is playing very good basketball right now, and you have to win that game. You know, you've got to keep winning to keep the pressure on. You probably watched the Portland win with Carmelo Anthony last night.
Big shot
from Melo.
Hitting
a big shot, yep. And they beat the Rockets. You probably watched that, and then, you know, whatever great mood you were in probably turned a little sour, but then you got up this morning and you watched Memphis lose, and you probably feel a little bit better. So it's a little bit of an emotional roller coaster right now for these guys.
Yeah, it is. In fact, Monty today even said that he told the players to draw on what NCAA tournament experience they have to kind of help them manage this.
We had a really good talk today about drawing from their experience. A lot of these guys have been in the NCAA tournament where you're playing high-stakes games and you got a different opponent every night. And some of our guys have been in the national, on national teams where they've done the same thing. So we talked about drawing from that experience and having the mentality of, you know, turning the page, learning from your mistakes, improving the things that we can and getting ready for another tough opponent.
Now, a tournament is a little different because if you lose, you're out, obviously, whether it's a conference tournament or an NCAA tournament or whatever the case may be. But in some ways, it does sort of have that feel to it. I mean, if you're a college basketball coach, you can only enjoy the win over the 3 seed so long before you have to start preparing for the next game. Otherwise, you're going to be out. And it kind of has that same tournament feel to a certain extent.
You know what's really interesting is that Devin Booker, his one NCAA tournament appearance, they got beat by Frank Kaminsky and Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
In the national semifinal, they lost to Wisconsin. They had won, you know, they had won a bunch of games, and then they played Wisconsin. They lost 71-64. Kaminsky had a big game with 20 points and 11 rebounds, and I believe Booker, he had 6 points in 19 minutes. So both of the, you know, Kaminsky obviously knows what it's like to go deep in the tournament. Booker did have 1 year, and that team won, you know, they won a bunch of games.
Yeah.
Yeah, they won, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4. They won 4 tournament games before losing to Wisconsin.
The you mentioned the scoreboard earlier today. Jazz beat the Grizzlies already, 124-115. Memphis is now 0-4 in the bubble. 8:50 to go in the game. The Nuggets are beating the Spurs, but only by 2, 97-95.
Oh, man, is that game not on?
That would also that game is not on. I don't believe that game is on. If you can find it, great. I would love it if you could. Actually, the Spurs just tied at 97-97.
Ooh, that's big. That's big. It's a big game.
You had this in your email today, and I think we need to go over this because I think fans are interested in this.
Okay.
If you're going to catch Portland for the play-in spot, assuming Portland is the team to catch, okay? The Blazers have 5 games remaining. If they go 2-3, Phoenix would have to go 4-1 or better.
Yes.
If Portland goes 3-2, the Suns would have to go 5-0.
Yes.
In order to catch
you
them.
Want to go over Portland's schedule? I don't know if you have that in front of you. I think you send me a schedule with all the teams.
Yes.
So they're a game and a half behind Portland.
Here's their schedule. You ready?
Yeah. So give me the Portland games.
Denver tomorrow.
Tough game.
The Clippers on Saturday.
Tough game.
Sixers on Sunday.
Tough game.
Dallas on Tuesday.
Probably not a tough game.
Brooklyn on Thursday.
They played hard, even though they got no players.
Right.
They won. Yes, they played hard. If Portland goes 3-2, you've got to go 5-0. You got to go 5-0. Now, This has taken out the reality that if Memphis completely falls apart, that you might be able to pass Memphis. But, I mean, if Memphis wins one game, you still got to go 5-0 to catch Memphis. You know, to pass Memphis, you got to go 5-0, and they got to go 1-4. If they go 0-5, you could go 4-1. So when you look at the scenarios, there's a way to catch Portland and a way to catch Memphis. Easier to catch Portland.
Yeah.
Can you see a scenario in which Portland goes 2-3? Possibly. And then Phoenix would have to go 4-1.
And keep in mind, when you say passing Memphis, you're talking about passing Memphis as we know them now, as the owners of the 8th seed. There's a very real chance that in the next couple of days, Portland is going to be the owner of the 8th seed, and Memphis is going to fall to 9. Right? I mean, so the idea of catching Memphis, because the way things stand right now, Portland is a game back from Memphis for the 8th seed in the Western Conference. Just a game. And the Suns, as it stands right now, are just 2.5 games behind Memphis for the 8th seed. Now, there's still the Spurs in front of them, the Pelicans in front of them. And by the way, you mentioned schedules. The thing that cannot be ignored in all of this is the Pelicans' schedule. It stands out like a sore thumb because it's just, you ready?
Okay.
Sacramento, Washington, Spurs, Sacramento, Orlando.
Ooh. That's a lot of easy games.
That's a lot of easy games. It's set
but
up.
They do play the Spurs.
They do play.
So somebody's got to lose that game.
And they play the Kings, although the Kings have now fallen behind the Phoenix Suns. So
Denver is now up 6 over San Antonio.
Good. Good.
7 minutes, 36 seconds left. The Nuggets are up by 6.
But I do really think right now this is so fluid that if you were to say to me in 48 hours from right now, is Portland the owner of the 8 seed and Memphis the 9, I could totally see that happening. Portland's got a tough schedule.
I read a story today that said Portland could be one of the most dangerous 8 seeds in the history of the NBA.
Yeah.
They could be one of the most dangerous 8 seeds ever.
It's funny. Isn't it funny that LeBron James congratulated Devin Booker? LeBron James might end up playing Devin Booker in the first round when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
Potentially.
You go crazy looking at these scenarios, right?
Yes.
You do. The Suns just have to win. They have to get 4 out of 5 wins to have a chance. Like, if the Suns go 3-2, I don't think that they're going to get in.
Sorry, I'm just thinking of Adrian on the bed telling Rocky to win.
Win. Win. Just win.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Sorry.
All right, Mick. Sorry, just win. Just win. Mm. And not Adrian, you can't win from Rocky 4, but Adrian, just win from Rocky 2, you know, and then he goes out and beats Apollo Creed. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, and I promise we'll keep you updated on that Nuggets-Spurs game, but a lot of moving parts with this. He's supposed to be the steady veteran that can elevate the entire Diamondbacks. What exactly is going on with Madison Bumgarner? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
One thing I want you to do for me. Win.
What are we waiting for? Take it!
Madison Bumgarner.
Who?
Stop. 3-time World Series champ. You know him. Come on.
Yeah.
Mad Bum.
Hey, didn't you used to be Madison Bumgarner?
Oh, wow. You're going there, huh?
I mean, listen, it's been tough to watch him.
I'll give him credit. He pitched through it his first 2 times. You could tell he wasn't throwing that hard.
And he kept him in the game.
And he kept him in the game both times. And if not for, you know,
first one, he made one big mistake.
Eric Hosmer, he was doing fine. He wasn't throwing very hard, but he was doing okay. Second time out, he did all right against Texas. Not great, but he did all right. Last night, I don't know if it was the lack of velocity. I don't know if it was the frustration with how they started the season. Whatever it was, man, the Astros were just waiting for it. They jumped on him. Jose Altuve solo home run in the first. Carlos Correa solo home run in the second. That horrible error in the fifth.
Throwing it to second base.
Ball away at second base. It was a messy outing for Mad Bum. 4 1/3. 7 earned runs, 8 total. He hit 3 batters. And before you start thinking there was some sort of Astro justice going on, it was Abraham Toro and Martin Maldonado. It was not Astro Justice that Mad Bum was going for.
Who is it?
Abraham Toro twice.
Abraham Toro.
And Martin Maldonado. Yeah. Altuve.
I thought you were going to play the Dion song. Abraham, Martin, and John.
Yeah, no.
the Dion song.
No.
Anybody here see my old friend,
he's
Abraham?
He's 0-2 with a 7.04 ERA.
Yeah, he's been terrible. And here's the thing. Listen, we keep talking about this. You have to win games that your top two pitchers pitch, and they're 0-5.
Yeah.
They are 0-5 in games that Madison Bumgarner and Robbie Ray has pitched in. You're not going anywhere with that. I mean, you can't go anywhere. Your top two pitchers, you're 0-5. Like, that's terrible. Listen, he's not missing bats very much, right? He's not missing bats. He's hit or miss a little bit here with Mad Bum. You know, I was in the press conference when he spoke afterwards, and he had a bad game. He said he just had a bad game. I still believe in his ability to, you know, be a frontline pitcher. But right now, there's a lot of struggles there. I believe, this is me, I think that the restart affected his preparation. I really do. I think that the restart, I think he's a guy that, you know, having to, you're ramped up and then you ramp down and then you restart it again. I think that his preparation, guys like that, they've got a certain routine and it dialed into a preparation. And I just think that for some guys like him, I do think that the restart has hurt him. So with that being said, it might take him 4 or 5 starts before he starts to get into a rhythm and a groove. But he is going to win games for the Arizona Diamondbacks. The question is, man, you got him on the hook for 4 more years after this. You can't afford for Madison Bumgarner to be a 500 pitcher with an ERA of 4.5.
No, and it's I'm going to play the soundbite. You mentioned Mad Bum's media availability last night. I want to play a couple soundbites from it. Here's Mad Bum and what you said just a second ago. Hey, look, I just was not good enough today against the Astros.
I don't know. I just wasn't very good, to put it bluntly. Just seemed like I couldn't get anything going for us, and that can't happen, especially in a season like this one. But the one that's going to wear on me the most was the throwing error more than any of the pitching stuff, because we're out of the inning right there. That's tough. I could make that play 100 more times and not make a bad throw, and unfortunately I did today.
But listening to you talk about it, you know what's funny, and maybe you disagree with this, I don't know. The long-term worry about Mad Bum, I have virtually none. It's all my worry is all short-term. It's all sort of, man, why is he not throwing very hard? Why does he have an ERA over 7? I think you make a really good point about his preparation and maybe his rhythm and his routine being all thrown off. I'm not worried about Mad Bum as a long-term investment made by the Diamondbacks.
Can I cut you off for a second here?
Sure.
$19 million next year, $23 million the year after that, $23 million the year after that, then $14. This year he was only making $6 million.
Mm-hmm.
So over the next 3 years, $20, $40, $46, $56, $65 million over the next 3 years.
Okay.
You're not worried yet?
No, and you know why?
Why?
I'm not. Before he made these 3 starts, I thought it was a tremendous contract that the Diamondbacks got Mad Bum under.
Yeah, under $100 million.
I'm not going to change my mind about
World
that.
Series champion.
I'm not going to change my mind about that for 3 starts. I'm not going to allow 3 starts to make me go, oh, never mind, bad investment.
That's you're right. You are correct in doing
I'm not going to do that.
People will.
Now, we get to the end of the year, and it's like this all season long. And we're talking about 12 starts where he's got an ERA around 7. Well, then we're going to have a different conversation then. But after 3 starts,
right,
I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, that's it, bad idea, horrible, they never should have signed him, awful investment.
3 starts is 25% of this season for him.
Yeah, so
25% of his starts are over.
And that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the here and the now and the today and the short term. The long term, I'll worry about the long term another day.
It's a good pitch. He'll figure out ways to get guys out and stay in it. I don't know, you know, I want to, I mean, if we get to the end of the season and he's had 12 starts and, you know, he's, you know, 3-8, you know, 3-7 with an ERA of 4.5, we might have some worry. Now, there was this, somebody put this out, and I can't credit the person because I don't know who it is. You might have it, but they had something on the velocity.
I've got it right here.
Okay.
Go ahead. You read it. You got it. Yeah.
Madison Bumgarner averaged 88.1 mile per hour on his four-seam fastball. That's his third lowest average four-seamer velocity in a game in his career. The two outings with lower, his prior two starts this season. Before 2020, his lowest was 88.7. So the velocity's down,
yes.
Right?
Yep.
And when the velocity's down, you're not missing bats. You're not striking guys out when the velocity is down. That's just a known fact. So he's got to find ways to pitch without having his normal velocity. I think the velocity being down, I'm going to continue to say this, I think that the ramp up and the restart, and I think his preparation was thrown off a little bit. I truly do.
Mike Hazen this morning with the Doug and Wolf show was asked about Mad Bum's velocity.
We're not talking about drastic differences with his velocity. You know, this was back, we used to have the Zach Greinke conversations about velocity too. Mm-hmm. Like, if the velocity range is 89 to 92, he knows how to pitch at 89, 88, 89, 90. Is not that significantly different. It's much different than a guy that's typically pitching at 97, pitching at 90.
I would agree with that, and I heard Steve Berthume, when I was driving from your house yesterday, call it velocity panic, that there's velocity panic about Madison Bumgarner. I think he's a crafty enough pitcher. He can figure out how to pitch with a little diminished velocity,
sure,
on his fastball.
Yes.
But he's never – I mean, if you're a pitcher and you're used to throwing 91, 92, and now you're throwing 88 – you're not going to be able to figure out how to pitch with diminished velocity right away. It's going to take you a little while. Okay, why is this not working? Why? I mean,
you want to be Frank Tanana. Do you remember Frank Tanana?
Of course.
But Frank Tanana was a guy who threw so hard, and then at the end of his career, he didn't throw hard anymore, and he figured out how to pitch.
But he didn't figure that
out. Lasted forever.
He didn't figure that out in three starts, right? And it's been and for Mad Bum, he's had three starts to kind of figure out. Okay, I rear back to throw my best fastball, and it's just not there. Now what do I do? And I think it's fair
to let him work on that.
To understand that he might struggle a little bit until he figures out, A, where the missing velocity went, and B, what kind of pitcher does he turn into if he doesn't have 4 miles per hour that he was expecting to have on his fastball. Because it's not a difference in the long term, but in the short term, if you're just trying to figure out how to pitch and you're missing 4 miles per hour off your fastball, that's not something you're going to figure out in three starts. It's going to take you a while to figure something like that out.
But also, your arm's going to get stronger, and if that 4 mile per hour turns into two, and then turns into one, then it's not that big of a difference.
From one program calling it quits to another possibly engaging in a coronavirus cover up. It's been a rough couple of days in the world of college football. We'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, we're talking college football here, but just in the name of what's going on with the Suns in the bubble, just want to pass it along. Nuggets did beat the Spurs 132-126. So another team doing the Suns a favor in the bubble. Thank you, Denver.
Spurs lose.
Thank you, Michael Porter Jr., who had 30 points, 15 rebounds in that game.
It is amazing how many teams that are fighting for that eighth or ninth spot are playing poorly.
Yes.
It is. How many teams are not, you know, have not played well?
Yeah.
Memphis is not playing well. San Antonio's not playing well. Sacramento's not playing well.
College football, we love you, but
you're in trouble.
We don't feel real good about you right now, and not because you've done anything wrong necessarily, unless that is your Colorado State. Because of all the stories, there's a ton of stories coming out of college football right now, whether it's UConn, whether it's the Big Ten, whether it's loans in the Pac-12, we'll get to that in a moment, or yet another high-profile college player who's going to sit this season out. It's the story from Colorado State that I keep turning my eyes to, Campbell.
I'm not surprised. Man, I am so not surprised at this story. I'm just not, because that's the mindset of coaches and not all, but of some coaches and some players.
Yeah. The story is, in case you missed it, Colorado State football players and university athletic department staff say coaches have told players not to report COVID-19 symptoms, threatened players with reduced playing time if they quarantine, and claim that CSU is altering contact tracing reports to make sure their players keep practicing.
One football player said, "I believe there is a cover-up going on at CSU."
Jeez.
but they could only cover it up so long. And now that we have so many cases across athletics, they can't cover it up anymore. It's not about the health and safety of the players, but about just trying to make money off their players. If this is true, they are all going to lose their job.
All of them.
All of them.
Yep.
Like, they will clean house.
Yep.
The athletic director, the coaches, the staff, if nobody spoke up about this, I don't know if it's true. I'm just responding to the report that I'm reading.
Of course.
In the Colorado paper, CSU athlete staff say athletic administration covering up COVID-19 health threat. If that's true, they're all gone. The whole staff is gone. Everybody. You can't do that. You can't not take this seriously.
Yep.
You can't.
You can't. And you can't ask your players to put themselves at risk like that. You can't treat them like cattle like that. I mean, you can't. They're human beings, and they have a right to know, and they have a right to not be threatened like that. And unfortunately, I hate to be a cynic about this, but I have to agree that this is – I have no proof of this. I have a hard time believing Colorado State is the only program that might be misreporting its numbers a little bit in the name. I mean, when you think about everything financially that's on the line for these schools and these conferences and this sport with playing,
yeah,
are we to imagine that one school is the only school that might be misrepresenting this? It's hard for me to believe that.
So the athletic director said at first they said that there were no positive tests. There were no positive COVID tests for athletes as of July 20th. That number spiked to 16, including 11 football players as of Sunday. There were 27 players, about a quarter of the team, missing due to COVID-19.
Yeah.
So that's a quarter of the team. And so you have that. And then, you know, another big story. I mean, UConn. UConn has decided that they are, and they're an independent, but UConn has decided to cancel their football season this year.
Yep, they became the first FBS program to suspend its football team because of the pandemic. They were 2-10 last year. I heard Paul Feinbaum this morning basically say they actually lose more money by playing than they do not playing.
Well, they have nobody to play.
Right. Well, and they've lost four teams off their schedule already.
Illinois, Indiana, Maine, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And then they were also bracing for North Carolina and Virginia.
Here's Heather Dinich. UConn's decision will not, she says, have a snowball effect around college football.
Multiple Power 5 athletic directors in different conferences have told me not to make too much of this and assume it's going to have a snowball effect. They think that this is unique to Connecticut because of the different resources there. Remember, they owe $17 million for leaving the American Athletic Conference. So it's about resources and it's about those athletes wanting to keep their eligibility and use it when it's a safer time.
The story I read suggested they are one of the most cash-strapped athletic departments in all of the FBS. And I agree with Heather that Power 5 programs certainly aren't going to follow suit. But will there be other independents that might or other conferences? It's possible. Nobody in the Power 5 is going to.
It seemed like UConn, that like their head coach doubted that they would be able to play. The players said, as a team, we're in full support of the decision not to compete. We have many health concerns, and not enough is known about the potential long-term effects of contracting COVID-19. Additionally, we have not had the optimal time to train mentally and physically to be prepared to compete this season. We love the game. We love competing. We came to campus at the beginning of July knowing there would be challenges presented, but it is apparent to us now that these challenges are impossible to overcome. So I think overwhelmingly the players felt like we're just not going to play.
Yeah. Then the Big Ten, they announced their 10-game conference-only schedule. Michigan-Ohio State will be played on October 24th, which is the earliest that rivalry has been played since 1942. The big thing about their schedule, and this is Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.
Okay.
We talk about the Pac-12's flexibility in their schedule. The Big Ten's has even more built into theirs, and here's why.
The key here with a lot of these schedules that they need most with the Big Ten of any other is the flexibility component. And, you know, they have 41 of their 70 games that can be moved to another week, which we know is likely if the season is even attempted, that there are going to be some stoppages and some postponements and rescheduling of games. And so, you know, I had heard initially that they were going to front load their schedule with division games, and, you know, talking to one of the assistant commissioners today, they were going to do that, but it just became apparent the best way to do this was to build in as many open weeks as possible.
Each team has two open weeks built into their schedule to use to move games if you have to. The schedule overall has 4 weeks built in to reschedule games if necessary.
You want to know what the problem is? They've got the Miami Marlins in the Big Ten.
Northwestern?
Rutgers.
Well, it was Northwestern that closed down shop a couple days ago, too. But, yes, Rutgers is the Miami Marlins.
Their outbreak has doubled. The entire program is in quarantine. How are they going to practice? How can they even practice? The entire team is under quarantine. The entire team. They've suspended all activities. They, you know, I don't know. How are they going to play that first game?
I don't know.
The Big Ten has the Miami Marlins in their conference.
Yeah.
They've got Rutgers.
Which is why they have 4 weeks built in to be able to perhaps move every single Rutgers game they play to give them time to get ready if they can. And then there's this from the Big Ten. Penn State linebacker Micah Parsons expected to opt out of his college season.
It's the third big-time player, right?
Yep, he's the third big-time player to do it now. He was expected to be a possible top 10 pick. Daniel Jeremiah said that based off of initial film, he'd put a higher grade on Parsons than he would have on Kenneth Murray, Patrick Queen, and Jordan Brooks, all guys who went in the 20s in this last year's draft, and he is expected to decide not to play.
I'll stay in the Big Ten. Michigan State defensive end Jacob Panasik also announced that he will redshirt this upcoming season due to coronavirus concerns. So he's going to redshirt because of the coronavirus. So he's not going out for the NFL draft, but he's going to use a redshirt year because of the coronavirus.
You add it all up, and there was this terrific column on Yahoo today from Pete Thamel, who basically said, you can feel a tidal wave coming. A Power 5 athletic director told Yahoo Sports on Wednesday morning that between Caleb Farley of Virginia Tech, Rashad Bateman of Minnesota, now Micah Parsons of Penn State, the internal investigation at Colorado State, Big Ten schools with significant breakouts. He said there's this feeling of dread that is starting to envelop college football.
Like, how many more body shots can they take?
Right, like there's just not much more you can take if you're college football to try to figure out how to play this. It's just mounting against them with every single story.
The players opting out to me isn't the biggest concern. You got a big roster. Yeah, if three of your best players opt out, you're still going to be able to have a team. If four of your best players opt out, you're still going to have a team. To me, it's just a situation of what happens if you have Rutgers, Northwestern, you have these teams that can't play because it affects everybody's schedule.
He is available to leave this offseason via free agency, but with the way he's performed so far this year, could Robbie Ray be on his way out of Arizona sooner than that? We'll explain coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. So, buttons. Madison Bumgarner has not won a single game so far for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's got an ERA over 7.
And more importantly, they haven't won a game he's pitched.
They haven't won a game they've pitched. Same can be said for Robbie Ray.
Yes.
And he's been significantly worse as a pitcher than Mad Bum has so far through his first two starts. So 5 trips now to the mound for each of those two guys, and the team is 0-5. Mad Bum's got an ERA over 7. Robbie Ray, who goes tonight, has an ERA over 8.5. He's 0-2, 8.64 ERA, taking on Lance McCullers. We have all long believed and long, frankly, known. I don't even think believed is the right word. Known that this is Robbie Ray's final year with the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's going to be a free agent. The expectation is that someone will want to pay him based off of his potential. Certainly not his results this year, but his potential.
I think he's losing a lot of money.
I'm sure he is.
A lot.
And that's why I'm kind of stumbling over my words, because I don't think he's going to get paid near as much as he thought he was going to. But now, with the Braves' injuries to Mike Soroka, who tore his Achilles over the weekend.
And then you were just telling me Max Scherzer may have went down today in the Nationals game.
Max Scherzer left after an inning for the Washington Nationals
today.
There was a story on CBS Sports. They weren't talking about Scherzer because this was written before Scherzer happened. But the Braves suffered a pretty sizable blow on Monday night when young ace Mike Soroka tore his right Achilles tendon. He will miss the rest of the season, and 2021 might be impacted. They listed pitchers that the Braves might be inclined to go after.
And Robbie Ray was mentioned.
Robbie Ray was on the list. Many expected the Diamondbacks to contend, they write, but they've been terrible so far. If they fall out of it, expect them to offload some vets. Ray is a free agent after the season and might be a change of scenery guy since he's fallen backwards since his 2017.
Yeah, there's two things about that. You know, obviously, the trade deadline is this month. If the Diamondbacks don't turn this around quickly, then, yeah, maybe they will sell off some pieces. The other thing is by expanding the playoffs and going to eight teams, I don't know how far back they're going to fall to where people aren't going to be like, oh, you can still get the eight seed, you know? I mean, as bad as they've been, it's not like they're 10 games out of the eight seed right now.
No.
Only played 11 games. So that's going to be interesting to keep your eye on. But, Mike Hazen will go by feel. If he feels that this team is not capable of winning and he has a chance to move Robbie Ray, then I believe he would move Robbie Ray. You get something back, you know, potentially you could potentially lose him for nothing, but you could get a draft pick. Or you can – well, I got to check the rules on that because when guys – I think they changed some of the rules on –
I thought they changed the draft pick compensation rule this year.
They may have.
Because they wanted to try to encourage guys to be able to leave and not feel like they wouldn't have a market to leave.
So if you could trade him and you could get something for him, yeah, I mean, obviously you have to consider it. The question is, how badly has he hurt his value? I mean, a team that's trading for Robbie Ray in a 60-game season – it's not like if you make a trade in July and you say, hey, I got this guy for the rest of July, all of August, all of September, and the playoffs. You know, if you trade for Robbie Ray, you know, at the end of August, you get him for 1 month. So that's different, too. It's not like you're trading for a guy and saying, I'm going to get 15 starts out of this guy. I'm going to get 12 starts out of this guy. You're going to get 4 starts out of the guy, 5 starts out of the guy. So his value is not going to be the same.
Yeah, I mean, to your point about the standings, and I was, while you were talking, I was listening to you, and I agree with you. I was looking at the standings, and to your point about that, right now the Arizona Diamondbacks are 2 games out of the final wild card spot with 49 games to play.
Sure, if you look at it like that.
If you look at it like that, you
may not want to, yeah. If he starts pitching better, you may not want to get rid of him.
Right, and I think more than anything, you talk about Mike Hazen doing this by feel. They need to start playing better. Not just for our sanity and not just for their sanity, but I don't worry about the standings yet. I know it's a short season, and at some point we're going to have to. I just need to see them start playing better so I can have a reason to believe they're going to be capable of making me think they could challenge for that 8th spot in the National League, right? I mean, to me, it's not a standings issue. It's not a games back issue. It's not a how many teams are ahead of them
not
issue.
Not now, but that it will become that.
Of course.
25, 30 games in if they don't play better.
Of course. It's just not there yet. Right now, it's just a, man, for the love of God, play better issue, you know? And then we can worry about whether you should pawn off Robbie Ray and whether you're in a playoff race or not, because it's just been all, I mean, we could sit here and have a very short conversation about what has been good for the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2020. It would be a very brief conversation. I don't even know what we talk about what has been good for the Arizona Diamondbacks. With Ketel Marte?
Andy Young had 2 hits last night.
Andy Young got his first big league hit.
There you go. Got 2 hits last night. Congratulations to Andy Young. Fantastic.
Christian Walker continues to look like a competent first baseman after the trade of Paul Goldschmidt.
Best overall player, in my opinion.
Okay.
Archie's looked pretty good. A little shaky at times, but overall good. We're 11 games, 49 games left. They're 2 games out of the 8th seed. I mean, if you want to be optimistic, they can't play any worse than they played.
No.
Can't play any worse than that. That's the good thing, right? They've hit rock bottom, and they're 11 games in, and they're two games out of the 8th spot. They play better. They could catch one of those spots. And they can't, like, you're not going to go the entire season without winning games that Madison Bumgarner and Robbie Ray pitch. It's not going to happen. So at some point, this is going to turn around, and they're going to play better. The question is, can they turn it around enough to make Mike Hazen believe that this team could do something if they get in the playoffs? Because if he doesn't, well, then you get a decent offer for Ray, then, okay, I'll trade him.
Sure, sure. And I think if, you know, what we've seen the trend around baseball, there are a bunch of teams who are losing their starting pitchers. I saw Rich Hill from the Twins went on the injury list.
Yep.
Now Scherzer has left the game. We don't know why. Soroka, Kershaw was dealing with injuries earlier. I mean, it's been one injury after another for starting pitchers. There might be a robust market for teams looking to sell their starting pitching, and the Diamondbacks might have, but Robbie Ray would have to pitch a lot better in the next few weeks for him to be an even remotely attractive trade deadline target for any team out there.
Yeah,
there's not going to be a huge market for guys rocking an 8.64 ERA.
Do you remember what he said going into the season about how well he was pitching?
Yeah.
I figured out why. He was facing the Diamondbacks batters.
That's good.
Yeah.
I
feel as good as I've ever felt.
It's funny.
I've never felt this good ever. I'm throwing the ball so well. Yeah, look who you're pitching to.
I read that joke in the email.
Exactly.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for the rim shot. I read that joke in your email,
yeah,
and I chuckled at it then.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's kind of funny.
Sure.
So when you said it, when you set me up for it, I didn't know that's where you were going.
It's like, man, I just struck out Jake Lipp three times in a row.
You know what? This is a rare day for you. Somebody laughed at your bad joke twice. Congratulations.
Honey!
They
think I'm funny.
Somebody laughed at your bad joke twice. Same person.
Why was it a bad joke?
Because it was. You could see it coming a mile
Jordan,
away.
Wasn't that funny?
Oh, yeah. That was great. Some of your best work.
I'm still cackling over here.
See?
You just can't hear me. I'm doing
my
it quietly.
My wife tells me all the time that I'm not funny. And I totally disagree with her. I think I'm funny.
We know you.
And she says I'm not.
I'm just checking Twitter right now to see if there's been any update on Scherzer, why he might have left. I'm not seeing anything just yet. As soon as I find out, I'll let you know.
Open for Frank Caliendo.
Frankie! Whoa!
Okay, wait. I would love that.
Whoa. Yes, I would. I would love to watch you try to do stand-up for 5 minutes, opening up for Frank Caliendo.
Yep.
I would put the over-under on the number of laughs you would get at 0.5.
Frankie, let's make it happen.
I'm John Gambadoro. I'm John Gambadoro. Look how handsome I am. Look how smart I am.
Do you have the boxing the kangaroo?
Gold Glove boxer. I'm sure he's looking for
it. I fight a kangaroo.
I could box a kangaroo. If I lived in Australia, I actually used actual golden gloves. They were heavy, but I was really strong.
More Frank A.
I think Sarah's never heard that before.
I don't think she has either.
That is
but
new
man,
to me. Oh, that's good.
Oh, yeah. That was a funny day. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, by starting the seeding games with a 3-0 record, the Suns have done their part. They are getting a lot of help from others in their hopes to make the postseason. We'll give you the very latest NBA update next on the Burns and Gambo show.